Welcome to the Fight White Genocide Podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff, where we talk about whatever we think is important in the global struggle against white genocide. This is podcast number 3, recorded January 9th, 2018. Today's topic is thoughts on fighting the propaganda war.
Well, I think maybe we could start off I was telling you how Sargon of Akkad had 8 questions for the alt-right. Now, I don't really consider myself so much alt-right. I am pro-white, so people would probably put me under the umbrella of alt-right. I have no problem with that. But Sargon had 8 questions for the alt-right, and it was basically about solutions to white genocide. And then a lot of people in the alt-right came and made their own videos, like Ramsey Paul, and a ton of other people responded to it and started giving solutions to these 8 questions that he had. And ultimately, our viewpoint is that white people are not allowed to have an open, honest, and fair discussion on white genocide. Therefore, there's no reason for us to discuss solutions until we are permitted and allowed to have an open, honest, and fair discussion on white genocide. You just had a guy who was with the NPI, National Policy Institute, who was quote-unquote doxxed and fired from his job. And the reason he was fired is because he objects.
Who was that?
It was one of I forget his name, but he's one of Richard Spencer's partners, I guess, with National Policy Institute. And he was going under a false name, going under like online monikers and in a fake name. But somebody doxxed him, got his real name. And it turns out he was a field hockey coach at a Catholic high school. And the school found out and they fired him for essentially not hating white people. And this is what I mean by we're not even allowed to have an open, honest, and fair discussion. This is what everybody should be working towards rather than coming up with a solution to a problem that we're not allowed to acknowledge. We should be working into normalizing the idea that we have every right to object to our genocide. And once we're allowed to have an open and honest, fair discussion, then we can start talking about solutions. And it's not like anybody within the alt-right, whether it's Richard Spencer or just some other guy, is going to have the solutions. White people aren't even allowed to, as a collective, discuss it. So how can white collective come up with a solution to a problem that we're forbidden from discussing? That's the whole point. There's no reason at all to even respond to Sargon's questions unless you're going to point this out.
Yeah, when pro-whites have free speech, we'll be glad to talk about solutions to white genocide.
Absolutely.
Ken, exactly. I think, 100% is what you said, and you said it before. We can't even talk about white genocide, so why would we be answering any of his questions in this guideline? Why are we talking about that? I can't even object to diversity without being fired from my job and fearing being called a racist, Nazi, and a white supremacist. So how am I going to talk about, should the state control the media? I mean, what a ridiculous question.
Right. And they're all – these questions are being asked because of that, because of the reason – they want it to be a gotcha thing where, it's taboo to even discuss white genocide, let alone come up with solutions to it. So that's his whole point of asking these questions, is because he wants a gotcha moment. So rather than giving him that moment, just point out the fact that whites are not even allowed to discuss it or even acknowledge it. So how are we going to come up to a solution? It's like somebody giving you a math problem and then saying, you're not allowed to use numbers to answer it.
It's the same with the Holocaust. As long as governments imprison people for deviating from the official line, then it's dishonest for you to ask me about the Holocaust. Well, I can't talk about that because if I say the wrong thing, I'll get thrown in jail.
Exactly.
If I was in Europe, I would. If I was in Canada, I would.
Right.
If you're not allowed to freely you're asking me to discuss something that we're not allowed to freely discuss. Through threat of imprisonment.
Right. And that's why a lot of people that are doing our work and putting out the mantra are under monikers, under false names, is because of that. Just like I was pointing out, the guy from the NPI who was doxxed, and it comes out, and he gets fired from his position as a coach at a he was coaching field hockey at a Catholic school, I believe, and fired from it because he objects to genocidal policies at the end of the day.
Greg Ritter? Greg Ritter.
Yeah, that's
his,
who it is.
That's his screen name.
Yeah. But, yeah, he was doxxed and fired from his job, and that happens all the time. Just like the girl who did the Fight White Genocide video. What was her name?
Carrie Ball.
Yep. That's
yeah,
right.
She was fired. She was fired for simply objecting to genocide.
Yeah.
Well, not even. She was fired for simply participating in the video. I mean, she backtracked on that, but she participated in the video and didn't necessarily say that she agreed with the views, but yet she was still fired for that. Absolutely. And I mean that it is almost coming to the point where it has to come down to legal action from people taking on these organizations that are anti-white. I mean, they are anti-white. I mean, I just saw on Twitter, I see that James Damore has filed a class action lawsuit against Google. I mean, this could be huge. He's not necessarily for us in a sense. I mean, he's going after discrimination rights, but it's pointing out, you know, that all these major companies have diversity programs. They have an atmosphere of white hatred, you know, and I think it's exciting to see something like this, on such a large scale, exposing that.
Yeah, they claim to be anti-racist, but they're simply anti-white. It just proves our point. And win or lose on that lawsuit, it's good to bring it up.
Yeah,
it puts them on the spot. It proves our point. That anti-racist is a code word for anyway.
Exactly.
Yep. It's going to make its way into mainstream news, so it's going to be something a lot of people are going to start thinking about. And that's the point. Winning the lawsuit would be great, but even if he doesn't, it's still going to be put out there and enter the public conscious.
Well, something that we also, you know, that we could – use this as a platform to get our messages out there. Exactly like Jeff said, you know, any racist is a code word for any white. I mean, it doesn't get better than this. So, but the same with all these people, you know, we have to start going on a legal avenue and going after these anti-white organizations. It is blatant that they are targeting white people. You know, that exactly this guy, these questions that he's asking, you know, it is the point that no one wants to speak out against it for fear of, you know, losing their jobs or their children's, you know, being harassed or any number of things that that people just can't stand up to, you know, can't stand up to the anti-white hate.
And another thing that you pointed out, Candace, you're asking us to solve a problem we didn't create.
Right. Mm.
The anti-whites caused all these problems. We're going to ask them to solve it.
Exactly. That's the other point about solutions. Why are you – it's like somebody coming in and, you know, dumping a bunch of fish guts in your in your living room and then saying, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to fix that? Well, I'm not the one who did it. You're going to have to fix it. And that's the big point here. It's even – a bigger point than the censorship and the fact that we're suppressed and not allowed to talk about it is pro-whites didn't create this problem. It's not going to be us that needs to fix it. And no matter – we're not even going to have to come up with a solution of how to fix it. Anti-whites are going to have to come up with the solution. And any finances that it takes to resolve the problem, is they're going to pick up the bill. It's not going to be pro-whites.
Third – if we look at what Sargon is doing, he wouldn't ask any non-white nationalists these same questions. Well, how does Japan handle all these things? How does China? How does Vietnam? How does Liberia? How does every racially nationalist nation handle all these problems? Secondly, how do multiracial countries handle these problems? They're the same problems. There's nothing special about white countries that makes it harder to solve all these problems. In fact, without races at each other's throats, it's easier to solve all these problems that he's talking about. You would never ask a non-white all these questions. He's trying to discredit pro-whites. That's his agenda.
He, Yeah, he's being disingenuous, and he's gloating over the fact that white people are not allowed to openly discuss these things. That's basically what he's doing.
And he's trying to paint the alt-right as anti-libertarian, I think.
Yeah, on paper, I mean, if you look at libertarian ideas, I don't see how pro-white views in any way conflict with libertarian ideas. In fact, I'd say they're pretty much on paper would be in line with one another. That's my view from that. But I don't really want to get into libertarianism versus pro-whiteism or anything like that.
Yeah, and the alt-right is going to have a lot of variation in those in attitudes on, you know, economics. You know, we're all pro-white, I assume.
Right. I'm assuming you're not anti-white.
Well, that's why we are so hard on the fact that we are just pro-white. And our talking points, you know, we are pro-white and we oppose white genocide. You know, it's not okay to be anti-white. What we're trying to do is trying to get them to jump on board with that mentality and, you know, that we have the moral high ground and, you know, we're not on the defensive. We're the interrogators. We're on the attack and, you know, taking, you know, shit from people like this guy, you know, who puts these ridiculous questions out to us when our race is being genocided. You know, isn't that, you know, the response that we need to be telling these people or showing these people and responding to this guy, you know, the 8 questions for the alt-right? Isn't that more the angle that we should be going on?
Right. We're pro-white. That's what you got to come back to all the time, because as soon as you try to do anything else, whatever it is, whether it's alt-right, whether it's Christianity, whether it's libertarianism, whatever ideology you try to rally around, they will just redefine it. Like when they say, those aren't Republican values. Okay, so they claim the right to define what Republican values are. Okay, and pro-whiteism isn't part of it. No matter what the word-ism is, they will define it as something anyway. So the only way to get out of that is to just say you're pro-white. Okay, well, are you Christian? Well, I'm pro-white. Are you libertarian? Well, I'm pro-white. Yeah. To the extent libertarianism is pro-white, I'm pro-libertarianism. To the extent that libertarianism is anti-white, I'm anti-libertarian, okay? I'm pro-white. That way, they're always trying to get you into a contradiction to discredit you.
Yeah.
And say, well, if you're a libertarian, though, what if somebody wants to hire somebody from India? How can you have a right to stop them? You know? Well, I'm pro-white.
It's as much as I despise like communism, whites could recover from communism. They did in the Soviet Union. We can't recover from genocide, or at least it would take a very, very, very long time for us to recover from that. So the whole political spectrum is really null and void on this. It doesn't matter. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They want to create an anti-white party of the left and an alternative anti-white party of the right. Yeah. Well, you have a choice. You can vote for the anti-white Democrats or you can vote for the anti-white Republicans, right? The fake opposition.
Right. And that's just it. I mean, we talked about Tucker Carlson mentioning white genocide in the last podcast. But the fact is, when he mentioned white genocide, he was only discussing it in the sense of what that Drexel professor was calling for as a violent genocide. When Tucker Carlson talks about white genocide, he's never talking about what we're talking about. He's not talking about massive immigration and forced assimilation. At the same time, he's against mass immigration, but you will never hear a Fox News correspondent or pundit ever talk about forced assimilation in a negative way. They worship it. It is holy to them. So ultimately, their position is an anti-white position in favor of white genocide. It's just they're not including the mass immigration. The way things are now, the way things stand in Western civilization, they've already brought in a few hundred million third worlders. So they don't even have to push mass immigration anymore. They can just push the forced assimilation into game over.
I think regardless of that, of the context, it was still such a win for us. You know, the same with Hillary Clinton mentioning white genocide. She wasn't talking about it in the context that we talk about it in, but she mentioned those words and I think that in itself is what we're all about, is still just, you know, drumming up and spreading that terminology around as far as possible. And it will come, right? It's going to come. There's going to come a time when they will put us on. As you say, we are the real opposition. You know, we are the true opposition. And there will come a time when we will go up against these. If we keep putting ourselves out there to say, hey, we want to be the opposition to this interview that you guys are saying, you know, we want to put our perspective out there. You know, he called for white genocide. We want to respond. And that there will come a time when they will be discussing white genocide from our point of view.
I hope so. I do see, like, Alex Jones has talked about white genocide in our context of the immigration and assimilation. I've only seen him do it once, but he has brought up white genocide in the term of violent context or whatever, just the same as Tucker Carlson has. So I agree that the use of the terminology and the phrase white genocide is a great thing. It's a monumental thing for us. But now it's kind of par for the course. Now it's – they're going to have to up their game. You know what I mean? I mean, just using the phrase white genocide isn't – I mean, that's normal now.
It is, as you know, the anti-whites, our terminology, you know, we've really succeeded in getting our terminology out there. Bob did achieve it. You know, he'd had that CNN interview, and, you know, we did have other articles and people calling up and speaking to Bob and getting our perspective. And that was, you know, that's over the last 4 years. So imagine now, as we're really moving into having more exposure and, you know, the billboards and things like that, and where this is becoming such a discussion, you know, the terminology really is getting out there, you know, really hammering in about the terminology of diversity. So it's going to come a time where they're going to, you know, want to speak to the other side. And if we're willing to put ourselves out there and say, you know, we are this team and we represent the opposition, and I think, you know, we really could have a position on and a platform to go against these anti-white organizations.
Well, I would agree. We're the only ones talking about it. So who else can they go to speak about this? It would be nice if the alt-right would, as a consensus, jump on board with our message. I mean,
it would be, but I think we have to put ourselves out there. I think Bob said, wasn't it like Reagan won that, you know, wasn't it something, guys, about how the media didn't know who to talk to? They didn't know it was such a blindsided. They just weren't aware. And actually, it was the same with Brex, right? The same what happened with Brex. They just didn't know what the public was thinking. They didn't know who to talk to. It was on the opposition and who was against it. You know, they fully thought they had the media covering everything and believing in what the people were thinking.
So I think Bob was saying that that's an opportunity to discredit them because they claim to be impartial journalists, but they don't know what half the country is thinking.
The other thing is we've had tens of thousands of articles written about our position, and 99.9% of them never even convey our position in an honest way. They usually lie about what our position is, and then, you know, they straw man it and then refute a position that we don't even have. So it would be nice if they're genuine and are looking for a real opposition to counter these other narratives, but I'm not so sure that many of them are. Some of them obviously probably will be, but most of them are just going to, you know, lie about what our message is and pretend it's something that it's not.
Absolutely. You know, they're going to continue it as long as they can, giving us the silence, you know, that or misrepresenting. But it's, you know, and I guess that is our job, isn't it? That's why we need to continue just doing what we're doing. But
well, let me ask you guys. I'm sure both of you have seen the Wikipedia entry on white genocide. Do you think that's an accurate portrayal of our position, way that they put it up there? No.
I know.
No, it's from an anti-white perspective, isn't it? I think that's been up there for a while. Yeah. I
mean, white genocide conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
First of all, they say it. They try to denigrate it right off the bat, just by the name of on the entry.
Right.
The white genocide conspiracy theory. Well, the official 9/11 story is a conspiracy theory, by the way. The white genocide conspiracy theory is a white nationalist conspiracy theory that mass immigration, racial integration, miscegenation, low fertility rates, and abortion are being promoted in predominantly white countries to deliberately turn them minority white and hence cause white people to become extinct through forced assimilation. Well, that's not bad.
It's not. I don't know. I mean, it's not totally accurate. I mean, how often are we ever talking about abortion or anything like that? Do you guys, I don't know.
Well, actually, there is a case for abortion. The fact that it was forced by a bunch of lawyers in dresses on us at the point in time where a massive demographic bubble was at peak fertility. So there is some issue there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you listen to Alex Jones, it was all pushed by Margaret Sanger, a KKK neo-Nazi white supremacist that wanted to kill all the black people. I think it's like the Wikipedia entry is close, but it's not accurate. I mean, and essentially, it's basically like putting up like Einstein came up with the theory of E equals MC quadrupled or something like. Well, why don't you let us define our position, and then you can go from there. They're telling us what we believe when I don't even believe much of what's in that white genocide Wikipedia entry. I don't even believe half of that of what I'm told that I believe. I don't know. It's the same thing like when the articles are written about us and they put our position up. They usually make up some straw man that I don't even believe and then say that's my position. I've had them do it like at one time I faxed over and emailed an entire university up in Wisconsin. And I got interviewed by the school newspaper and they totally took every word that I said. They were changing words around and saying that anytime I said the word anti-white, they replaced it with non-white and that kind of stuff. Like, and then it ended up being like what was written up there is nothing that I believe, but they said that's what I believe.
Yeah. So whenever an anti-white interviews you, make sure you have your own recording and use it as an opportunity to discredit them. So show what liars they are.
Oh, the good thing is it was all done in email, so I was able to email his editor and say, this guy's putting up nonsense up there. Correct it. I think eventually they did. It also happened in, like, Oberlin College where they did something similar and just and just came up with a straw man. They asked me what I believe I told them, and then they changed it all and said, I believe something else. It was very strange. But, I mean, that's the kind of suppression and censorship that we're dealing with. And that's why I was saying, like, 99% of these articles about white genocide from the mainstream, when they describe our position, it's not even accurate. Right. Most of the time, it's not.
You know, there's a debate going around, should we even talk to the mainstream media? And I say, well, like everything else, it depends on how you do it. They claim, well, you're never going to get a fair shake. There's only downside. And I say, well, if you stay on message and you have your own recording of the whole thing, it can be to your benefit because you can show how dishonest they are. You can discredit them.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what happened with Bob. In fact, I think Bob's instance, Laura, when you were there and he was being interviewed by CNN, I think that's like the first instance of people recording and doing that I can recall, at least. I know they did it afterwards with like Katie Couric and the NRA. But I mean, Bob sat down and the interview was like 40 minutes long. And all they could dig up from Bob was like a 5-second clip out of 40 minutes. They had probably 40 or 50 minutes of footage. And all they could find to push their anti-white narrative was like a 6-second clip of Bob. That's when you know that, you know, you're on message.
It really is. And that is that interview was a model example of how it was Jeff, I think, who transcribed that out. And they would ask a question and Bob like completely answered something totally different and on exactly the point that he wanted to make. And it was just brilliant. You know, he wasn't intimidated by them and he wasn't, you know, on the defensive. He was constantly on the attack. And like you said, they couldn't get anything from it bar a couple of seconds of speak. Yeah.
Right. And that's the point Jeff was making is if you're on message, it doesn't really matter. If you're on message and saying the right things, the worst case scenario is that they're not going to have anything they want to print or to publicize. That's a worst case scenario. And if you record it and, you know, that's something Ramsey Paul did. He was interviewed, I forget by who, but he recorded it and he released it before the interview or before the article even was printed. He had already released the audio. So
that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's how you do it.
Yeah. Well, because they manipulate it so much for their, you know, their narrative. You know, we were talking about narrative last time, but yeah, exactly.
American History X narrative, basically, is what they always want to force fit your interview into.
Right. I mean, that's the goal they're looking for. That's the image. They want the American History X kind of thing. The Christian Picciolini.
The Christopher Cantwell, they interviewed him for two days. And finally, they cajoled him into taking his weapons out, and that's practically the only thing they showed.
Yeah. That's all they needed. That's all they were looking for. That's the point is that when you're going through that, they're only looking for one quote. They're only looking for one or two things. So you can be there for an hour, and if you give them the one or two things, everything else that you say means nothing. Because nobody's ever going to hear it unless you record it and release it.
And another thing with the Sargon stuff, as I said before, he's trying to say the alt-right is collectivists and collectivism is always bad. But it's not. There's good collectivism and bad collectivism. There's good individualism and bad individualism.
Right. The extreme individualism is when you have loyalty to nothing. Which is pretty much the anti-white position, is that, or at least a white anti-white position, is that they have loyalty to nothing at all, not to their family, their race, their civilization, or anything. They've got loyalty to nothing, and that's extreme individualism, and that's very problematic, in my opinion.
And there's good and bad collectivism. If you're collectivizing around some ideology, especially an ideology that hates your race, that's bad collectivism. If you're collectivizing around your own kind, that's good collectivism. You can never accept their premises because they'll try to use that to discredit you.
And you know, we've always said that we only have such a short amount of time to do this. You know, we only have the attention spans here to get such a message across, and it's so important that we, you know, we stay on message and we discredit the anti-whites, you know, these anti-white people who are just anti-white. They're terrible. They're despised, despicable. You know, we don't want to give them any time or any authority or any, you know, anything. They are pushing a program that is genociding our race, and we need to keep the charge on them.
Yeah. You brought up a great point, Laura, about time, is that you don't really have a whole lot of time to make a point with these people. That's why these short memes, and if you want to call them slogans or whatever, that's why they're good. And that's why people need to use them. Keep it short and sweet. And that way, if you do lose them, you've still made your point within a time. You know, they're not going to give you 30 minutes to explain your views on the biological reality of race. They're just not going to.
Exactly.
So you only have a few seconds to make a point, and then that's why white genocide using our memes and our talking points is the best method, in my opinion. And I think we've got the track record that backs that up.
It is 100%. And, you know, I think a lot of people really enjoyed that we are a team that discusses strategy and tactics. And that is exactly what Bob, you know, has taught us, and how important it is to stay on message, how important a consistent message is, and how important it is that we keep reminding ourselves that we have the moral high ground. You know, what is happening to our people is not okay. It's not okay to be anti-white. It's not okay to pick on white people. And we just need to keep hammering those points, and those points only.
Right. And part of making the point that it's not right to pick on white people is to not pick on non-whites in the process, which, you know, some people choose to do. And it's not an effective thing. It's just not. It doesn't work. It's failed for the last 50, 60 years, and it's not going to suddenly work one day. That's the whole point of taking a moral high ground. I mean, if we could just narrow it down to a few things, like take the moral high ground. You only have a few seconds to make your point, so make it short and sweet and good, and take the moral high ground, obviously.
Right. We don't have to lie about anything. They're anti-white and won't admit it. We're pro-white and admit it. They're trying to get rid of white people, and for the most part, they can't admit that openly. You know, they're extremists, too. But everybody knows what a white person is. Anybody that says they don't, or, you know, ask what's a white person, they're being dishonest, and they should be attacked on that basis. Anybody, same with white country. Anybody saying there are no white countries or what's a white country, they know what a white country is. They should be attacked on that basis. Don't argue about what is a white country or what isn't a white country, or what is a white person or what isn't a white person. Everybody knows the answers to those questions. Just the fact that they're asking the question, it gives you an opportunity to discredit them. Same with, you know, what is race? Everybody knows that race is real. I mean, Great Britain just passed a law saying their biggest companies have to have put non-whites in their board of directors. So they obviously know what white people are.
Okay. Right.
Exactly.
you have to put minorities in. Well, whites are a minority in the world. Whites have always been a minority in the world. You know, so don't use their framing that, okay, whites are the majority and then there's these minorities. Well, okay, that's the way it is in white countries, yeah, but not in 90% of the world. Japanese aren't a minority in Japan. Chinese are not a minority in China. Vietnamese are not a minority in Vietnam. Mm. The difference is, yeah, whites are being turned into minorities, deliberately turned into minorities in all their homelands and former homelands, yeah. But it's not like whites have never known what it's like to be a minority, you know. They've been in minorities in lots of countries, and they're usually not treated very well.
Right. And they're a world minority, and the only race not allowed to maintain their existence, allowed to continue their existence.
No non-white has been forced to live in a white country since, well, 1865 anyway. You know, if you don't like it, you know, you've got plenty of places to go. If you don't like white people,
right,
you got most of the planet to go to.
Right.
You have no right to live with white people. Okay. We're not going to talk about what's a white person. We're not going to talk about what's a white country. We're not going to justify our existence either. We're going to just say we have a right to exist. Are you saying we don't? We have a right to homelands and self-determination. Are you saying we don't? You know, they're trying to say we're not going to talk about IQ or creativity even. You're saying
it doesn't.
We're just going to say whites have a right to exist. You know, are you saying we don't? Why do you need to go farther than that? I mean, I see most of the ink spilt on pro-white side is about things that really don't matter that much.
Mm-hmm. Most of what they discuss doesn't help our future, our existence. I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, a lot of the people that talk about news and Jews, none of those topics do anything in favor of our survival. They just don't.
No.
Yeah, the question you always have to ask is, does this discredit the anti-white system or anti-whites? Okay.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then what are you
doing?
What you'll
find there, Jeff, is from the, you know, responses that if you make those statements that you're just saying, you know, we have a right to exist to self-determination, is you'll find that anti-whites then will start justifying a reason why we don't. You know, they start to then justify all, you know, white guilt or white privilege or all these other reasons as to why, you know, white people should be blended out of existence. And from there, you know, we have the attack that we have it's a hole in one, basically. You know, you've got the anti-whites admitting that they want the crime of genocide. They want to wipe out white people, and exposing that point is you've won. You know,
yeah, they're saying whites are horrible and they got to go, but they're using examples of things that all racists have done. So that's what you point out there.
Whites have never committed any unique crime. But they want to portray it that whites have, that whites are somehow, white kids are somehow uniquely evil by, you know, just existing. Their mere existence is just pure evil. When they can't point out anything that whites have done that other races haven't, other than the achievements of whites.
Right. And that's why that meme is so brilliant, you know, that whites have never committed a unique crime, but we have an infinite number of unique achievements. You know, it's exactly it. We've done nothing that any other race hasn't committed. And when that topic of slavery or, you know, anything comes up, that should be the response for white people is that we've committed no crime. And why are we being forced to accept millions of non-whites? Why are we being forced to have, you know, diversity quotas and all these programs imposed on us to blend us out of existence? You know, why are we forced to become a third world? I think that's the point. You know, we've committed no unique crime, but we've an infinite number of unique achievements.
Yeah, they'll bring up colonialism. Well, Japan has a horrible colonial record. Turkey has a horrible colonial record. Well, the Aztecs and the Incas, you know.
Right.
Did something similar. The Zulus came down and the Congoids came down and conquered all of southern Africa, you know, and displaced the existing populations there.
Yeah.
But you never complain about any of that, so.
Yeah. The Blackfoot Indians went around and terrorized and conquered the Salish, the Kootenai, the Flathead native tribes.
Mongols slaughtered millions. They'd slaughter whole the entire population of whole cities numbering in the millions.
I mean, you won't hear us argue that they do not deserve their human right to exist just because of this. But the anti-whites argue this about whites.
Yeah. And exactly. Europeans have been enslaved. We have over about a million in North Africa and millions by the Turks. Millions of white people were kidnapped and enslaved by the Turks. Europe was invaded over and over again. The Huns, Avars, Mongols. It's not like white people are the only ones that ever invaded anybody.
But that's the way they like to frame it, is that whites are exclusively guilty of these things when we're not. And that's the way our half-baked educational system is pretty much pervade colonialism and slavery, as is that only whites are exclusively guilty of this. So they believe what they're told. They believe the Hollywood and the academia lies.
Yeah, that's one of their basic big lies, is that whites are uniquely evil. That's what their claim is, and that's where they're wrong.
Yep. Right. And at the end of the day, their lack of historical knowledge does not justify the genocide of a race.
Yeah. And the fact that they frame everything that way just proves they're anti-white. You know, they only bring up things that white people did, but never when non-whites did exactly the same things and much worse. Okay. Yeah. You're not anti-colonialism. You're not anti-slavery. You're just anti-white. I pointed out to a guy that there's slavery going on right now in Africa. And he said, well, is it like this, you know, like the white people did it? And I said, well, you're not anti-slavery. You're just anti-white.
Right. Exactly.
I think that's 100% the point there, Jeff, that, you know, and that we're all about giving the tools to people to be able to respond to these charges, you know, and that's exactly it. You know, when people are in college and things like that, or schools or jobs, and where they're being pushed with these anti-white, you know, charges, or, you know, that they have a response that they can say. And that's exactly what we want to provide for people was what you just said then. You know, you're not anti-slavery, you're just anti-white. You're not anti-colonialism, you're just anti-white. And that's exactly what we want to give people to be able to respond with.
Yeah, you're not pro or anti whatever you claim to be. You're just anti-white, and you can usually prove that pretty easy. So don't,
yeah,
you know, don't try to justify white people's right to exist. We have a right to exist. You know, are you saying we don't?
Right. And
what about colonialism? Well, everybody did that. So you're saying nobody has a right to exist? Or why are you picking out white people? Why are you singling out white people?
On the attack. That's it, Jeff. Exactly.
You're trying to discredit them. They're trying to discredit you. You're trying to discredit them. That's how you take power in the real world. In office is not in power. Real power is controlling public opinion.
It is. That's right. You know, it was interesting talking about controlling public opinion. I think Ken brought up something really interesting in our group chat the other day, that about how when a comment has a certain amount of thumbs up and it's the top comment, viral YouTube video or something, that it actually shows consensus. You know, people view those comments with validity when they have a high number of thumbs up and as appear as the top comment. And I think that's really interesting, that a great perspective on how things are received. And if we're trying to do that in getting that popular opinion, and that this is what we're seeing and how to do it, you know.
Yeah, people don't like to admit it, but peer pressure works on a lot of people. And nobody wants to admit it. There was actually that one psychological study. I forget the name of it. It's the Ash conformity psychological study, where they have a group of people and they have lines that are at different lengths. And a lot of the people that are involved in the study are all pretending that the shorter line is longer, but one guy isn't part of it. And eventually the guy that isn't part of the scam starts agreeing with these people that the shorter line is longer, just because he's giving in to peer pressure. And that's essentially how this forming popular opinion actually works. Unfortunately, I wish it wasn't that way, but that's...
Was he a white fella?
Well, yes, I think so. Yeah, if you can go to YouTube, and they've got all kinds of different videos on the Ash conformity, where they go through and do it, where they have several people that are all pretending that one line is longer than another, and then the other guys, at first he starts saying, well, no, that line is longer. Against them, but then he sees that everybody else is saying that the line is longer, so he's like, okay, fine, the line's longer, and he starts agreeing with it. But then they do something else in the study. They throw in another guy that agrees with him that the line is longer. He goes, so now there's two people against, let's say, five people. And he's more likely to go along with saying, you know what, it is longer, if he's got one other person there help, you know, going along with that proposition that the line is in fact longer. So
yeah, the reason I asked if he was white was because I'd seen a similar video of an Asian woman, like in a doctor's office or something, and everyone stood up when the next person got called, or before the next, and then everyone sat down. And so when she came in, it took a little while, but, you know, after three or four rounds of her seeing everyone stand up and then sit down, you know, she started standing up and sitting down with everyone, like, just randomly. And she's like, what's going on? But she ended up doing it. But see, the thing that didn't fit there was, well, she was an Asian woman, and Asians are probably very likely to do that they would follow, you know, if everyone's doing it, well, I better do it too. You know, I don't, you know, and especially in a white country, you know, so. But anyway, so
I know exactly what video you're talking about. They like a bell rings, and then they stand up or something, and then
they all stand up and sit down, and then someone goes away, and then and then she's left there by herself, and she still does it, and there's nobody else in the room. But so that, for me, that is a hard one to believe, because, you know, Asians probably really wouldn't do that. But if it was a white person that actually believed that, I mean, really, would a white person go and do that? I don't think so.
Well, in that video, they show a white guy, and he's like, he doesn't want to do it. And he goes pretty long without doing it. But at the end, he's doing it. He's standing up.
Interesting. Yeah. And I guess that is the power of consensus, you know, that if the mass is saying, you know, one thing, then that's why a lot of people just tend to, they're sheeple, right? They just follow along. And so if we can get that mass consensus of a discussion on white genocide, and we really start turning the tide on that diversity, you know, that this code word, we're exposing this code word of diversity, that it just means, you know, fewer white people, and it's chasing down white people, and, you know, that this program of diversity is white genocide, then I think, you know, we're really starting to, you know, have some huge momentum here.
Yeah. But one thing they didn't do in that video, by the way, that they did in Ash Conformity is they didn't have another guy sitting there that was saying, you know what, I'm not going to do this. This is stupid. Because if they had that other person there that wasn't doing it, that guy would have been less likely to go along with it. If he's got one person there, one other person.
That's right. Just one person.
Yeah. Then he's less likely to do it. But you know, a lot of times he probably still eventually would have done it, but he's less likely.
Yeah, we're that one person. What do you mean? This is anyway. Right. You know, you're not anti-racist. You're anyway. You know,
exactly. That
so
one.
Some people can lead by example. You know, and some people will follow. Most people have all the anti-white talking points right at the top of their mind. They can quote them in their sleep. Yeah. That's the real estate we want to occupy. We want to evict the anti-whites. Have people be able to repeat our talking points just as fluently as they currently repeat the anti-white talking points. We want to occupy that prime real estate right at the top of people's consciousness.
When that bell rings, we want them to stay sitting. don't go along with this.
Or I think more of the response, you know, when we want people to respond when they're called a racist, their automatic response is, you know, you're anti-white. That, you know, that they're not taking this anymore. That's an exciting visual, you know, exactly, Jeff, that it is, that's their response. You know, we want them to have that straight-up response as they do with the anti-white talking points.
I think on the ground level that most people, when they are called racist now, they are responding in some way or another. They're objecting to it. They may not be using the proper way to object to it, but they're countering it in different ways. So they know something's not right about it, and that's a good point to start from for us. Is when they know something's not right.
And why are they like that now? I wonder why.
Yeah,
I wonder.
It's because of all the reporting on black crime, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because everybody said points out that person's a Jew.
Yep, that's the reason they're figuring it out.
Yeah.
That's why
they have a great response to the accusation of being racist. Yeah.
It's you know, it's really exciting, and I think just reading this conspiracy white genocide conspiracy theory here on Wikipedia, you know, it's. If nothing else, it's so super exciting to see that they've put Bob's name in here, you know, as the man behind white genocide and the meme, anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. And I think a part of our cause now is to really honor him in the sense of how much he did for us. You know, he really provided everything for us and gave us the means to expose what's going on. And you know, it's awesome to see so much effect taking from one guy who was so persistent in exposing the system and fighting for his race. It's exciting. Right,
there's no doubt that Bob Whitaker gave me a lot of pieces to the puzzle that I would have never heard anywhere else. Like, he made a lot of things that were never made sense to me. He made them make sense. I haven't seen anybody else like that since, and I hope we get more of those out there. More people like Bob.
Yeah, me too. You know, ideally that's the dream, that someone will come along and be able to take the lead on this sort of stuff. But I was talking to Ez this morning about it, and it's so frustrating because we have such a unique method, you know, and a unique strategy and our, you know, we have been around, you know, Bugsers, most Bugsers, the senior Bugsers have been around, you know, 4 years and have transitioned with Bob through that period of time, and our, you know, our understanding of the method and staying on point and how important it was, you know, everything that we've been through. So, you know, how do you expect somebody who, I mean, they may pick up the white genocide memes or they may pick up and say, hey, this is great, you know, but they really don't know how to use it. You know, they really don't know how to be effective with it and stay on point and stay, you know, they just on the attack and the moral high ground, they just don't understand how all that comes together. And with so many people, they seem to have that, you know, that one bit of anti-white hate, and you know, a lot of them seem to crumble and they'll start, you know, justifying or their, you know, their loyalty and you know, all this whatever, they start justifying or balancing things, and anyway, it starts breaking down because they don't have the strength to stand up against the Marxist state. You know, actually, I posted this morning, and it was from Bob, a comment on Twitter about that, about those who have to justify their feelings of loyalty and decency cannot stand up to a Marxist state. And I think that's, you know, it's in a sense of why it's a bit depressing, because these people, you know, I hope there comes a time that somebody will take this stuff and stand out in front. But at the moment, it just seems like so many people, you see these ones sort of start to rise and they take on some of the stuff, and then they just get absolutely bombarded with anti-white hatred and they cripple under that or are constantly justifying themselves or their position. And we really have the lead, you know, we are so far ahead of the game in our understanding of what's effective and our method and getting out there and how we've got to do this. We just need to keep taking the lead, I think. I mean,
I think a lot of pro-whites are afraid of being humiliated.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the main stumbling block here. They're afraid of if they do confront an anti-white, that they'll be humiliated, that they'll look bad, that they'll look stupid. So to them, I would say, well, just watch us and learn, and it gets better, you know. It gets easier.
Right.
Just try it out and don't be afraid to be humiliated. We're talking about the survival of our race here, people. You say you claim, you know, you're willing to do anything, whatever it takes, by any means necessary. Well, are you willing to be humiliated a little bit, you know, to save your race? Is that too much to ask?
And the truth is, if you just take Bugs Buddy, if you go to Google and type in Bugs Buddy and you stick to that, you're not going to get humiliated. You're just not. Yeah, you're going to make your point. I mean, they may start making fun. Oh, well, you believe in white genocide and it's stupid and that kind of stuff. But, I mean, these are people basically – that's just what felons do when they get caught red-handed. They start calling their accuser mean, ugly, and stupid. Yeah. And if you're afraid of that, then this isn't for you. In fact, I'd say the entire pro-white movement probably isn't for you.
Yeah.
You should – at least not being an activist in it. But, I think a lot of people like Jared Taylor say, oh, well, white genocide is a hard sell. Well, if you're not going to – if you're not willing to tell them what the legal definition of genocide is, then, yes, it would be kind of hard. But if you're using – I mean, we've got the memes all out there that explain white genocide under law. We've got the memes and we've got the talking points with Bugs Buddy. If you use it and start – talking to anti-whites, you'll realize that they say nothing new. They're all programmed to say the same thing. It doesn't matter if they're a five-year-old kid or a PhD. Their arguments are always the same against whites.
Yeah. Whites don't exist. Whites are evil. That's their argument. Or, they flip back and forth between those two contradictory ideas.
Right. White genocide isn't happening, and here, let me explain to you why it is happening.
Yeah.
They jump from
I think, you know, you said in about, you know, feeling stupid, and I think that's a big part of what Bugs is about, is that we're not out to be intellectual. You know, we're not out to show how smart we are. We're about making our points, staying on point, and repeating those points and repeating, no matter how stupid that makes us look.
Yeah, part of our model here is we claim that people are in a brainwashed, demoralized state that mere facts are not going to have any effect on. Just stating something, no matter how true it, isn't going to deprogram them. But repetition of the truth, of a very simple true statement, gradually over time breaks down that brainwashing. I think that's where we're completely different. Most
repetition.
People, they don't understand that. They think that they can just make rational arguments and that that has some effect on brainwashed, demoralized people, but it doesn't. But saying this very simple truths over and over that discredit the people that they worship, the system that they worship, that gradually deprograms them over time.
And I mean, anti-whites have demonstrated how effective repetition works by their dumb phrases that aren't even true. Diversity is a strength. Mm-hmm. They've just repeated it. It's not true. Repetition by itself works, whether or not it's true or not. But we've got the advantage that we're using the truth.
It's our only advantage. But yeah, it's a big advantage. And also, white genocide is a hard sell. Well, what made you think taking power would be easy? People in power don't want to give it up.
You know, black crime isn't a hard sell, I guess, you know. The truth is, I mean, with the black crime stuff, you can talk to the average white anti-racist and give them all the black crime stats, and their response is, so what?
Yeah, whites commit crimes too, y'all.
Yeah.
White terrorists kill more people than Muslim terrorists, you know. Mm. Not all Muslims are terrorists. The average brainwashed, demoralized white person has plenty of defenses against black crime and Muslim crime and terrorism, and, you know, it's the Jews. They're completely armored against that.
I'm going to speak as somebody that is actually a former anti-white or anti, quote-unquote, anti-racist. You know, at one time I was. When I would hear people talk about black crime or Jews, to me, back then, it just sounded like bullying, like you're bullying people. And I would imagine the vast majority of white anti-racists, quote-unquote, anti-whites, whatever, they think the same. When they hear somebody just spouting off stats about black crime or talking about Jewish ownership of media and things and bankers and all that, that what they think is in their mind is that you're just bullying them because you don't like other races.
Yeah, you're a hater.
That's what I thought. That's what I, as an anti-racist, and that's just my personal opinion, that's what went through my mind when I would hear this stuff.
Because none of it attacks anti-whites or the anti-white system.
Yeah.
Right. And what's brilliant is showing that they are the real bullies, you know, that flipping it around and showing now. So understanding that is their perception, you know, as your personal experience, you know, but now, and it's the same, you know, but now in saying that these talking points that anti-whites push on us is bullying white people, you know, everything that they push and promote is bullying white people and, discrediting them and their viewpoints is our main focus.
Right. It's about the moral high ground. And when I heard it as an anti-racist, when I heard this stuff, I took it as bullying non-whites. That's the way I personally perceived it. And I think the majority of white anti-racists, if you want to call them that, that's the way that they take it. Is that you're bullying them. You're not taking a moral high ground. It doesn't matter. And I'm not saying that the people that are pushing these stats are bullying people. I'm just saying how it's being perceived by anti-racists or anti-whites.
Yeah, it hasn't worked for 70 years. What makes you think it's gonna work now? Telling people that, you know, black crime stats and, you know, it's the Jews and all these other topics that, you know, white nationalists or stormfronters have pushed for all these years. It has no effect on people because exactly what you're saying, Ken, you know, they see it as you're bullying them or they're the victim and, you know, or whatever else. I mean, and it is crazy, but they are brainwashed. This population is brainwashed into believing that diversity is our strength.
Right. I bought into all of it. I bought into the whole Hollywood thing. I did. Hey, I was born into it.
For sure. Yeah.
So, and a whole lot of people were. And again, I mean, take my opinion for what it's worth. And again, I'm not saying that people have the intention of bullying these people when they do that. I'm just saying that's the perception, and that matters because what Jeff was pointing out is that we want to control popular opinion. Mm-hmm. That's our objective. And you're not going to do that if people think you're bullying mm-hmm. other races. You're just not.
And it's not, we're not doing this in a vacuum. We've been subjected to to decades of anti-white brainwashing. So we're just trying to undo that. We're not trying to control people. We're defending ourselves.
Well, we're just pointing out the obvious truth, exposing the system and the program that is taking place around us. When we stay on point, what's so important for pro-whites to stay on point is that it doesn't allow the anti-whites any wiggle room. You know, they're not allowed to tailgate you off, as we call it. You know, they're not allowed to take you off on a different topic or make you talk and discuss about black crime statistics. Or there's not that much, you know, there's not that much crime in Detroit. You know, your whites commit whatever it's, you know, might be. There is no use for us to discuss that. And that's why it's so important for pro-whites to stay on message and keep discrediting the anti-white in the fact that they are pushing anti-white policies and anti-white hate. You know, they're forcing white people to hate themselves. And if we don't hate them, if we don't hate ourselves, then they scream racist, Nazi, and white supremacist at us.
The anti-white is just dying to make the conversation about how anti-Jew, anti-black, anti-Muslim you are. What they don't want to talk about is how anti-white they are. Always go back to how anti-white they are.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Don't play the role that they want you to play. They've got a script in their mind, and they want you to fit that role. And they're going to do and say whatever they can. And they're going to ask questions like Sargon of Akkad asked to get you to play the role that they want you to play. Don't play it.
No displacement or replacement or suicide or, you know, these other terms that they call it. I mean, there is no other answer or explanation except that it is white genocide. You know, we're not being replaced. We're being targeted for genocide by assimilation. You know, we're not moving somewhere else,
right,
and have a different homeland. So. And we're not choosing this. You know, they say a suicide. Well, we're not choosing this. Nobody gave us a vote and said, hey, yeah, we want to flood ourselves with millions of third worlders. We want to become a third world country. No, you know, we're being forced to accept this and we're being forced to assimilate. And that's why it's genocide. And it's the easiest sell out there because it's so blatant. They say that's what they want. Sarkozy said, you know, that our whole purpose of the 21st century was to interbreed.
Right.
Yeah, I think President Trump said it best.
A campaign of genocide.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That is exactly what it is, President Trump.
They're openly saying that they want a mixed race brown future. They're not bragging about replacing whites or moving whites to another jurisdiction.
Yeah. They're not moving us. They're getting rid of us, yeah.
They're moving us. It probably wouldn't be a huge deal, you know. Just like the natives were, they kept being displaced, I guess. That's the accusation, that they would move to a place and then whites would come in and they'd have to play musical chairs until they were eventually drowned out. That's not happening with whites.
They never say the Aborigines were replaced, yeah. Or the American Indians were replaced.
That's it, exactly. And the Prime Minister in Australia, Mick Dodson, said that it was genocide. Assimilation was genocide. And yet, you know, people can totally jump on that and say, yes, you know, assimilation is genocide when it happens to the Aboriginal people in Australia. But yet when it's happening to white people in all white countries, you know, people scream, you know, that we're racist Nazis, white supremacists if we oppose this massive program of immigration.
Yeah. It all goes back to the mantra. We all know if every black country was being flooded and forcibly assimilated and they were harassed and threatened and censored, if they object, everybody would call it genocide. Yeah. We all know that. Anybody that says otherwise is just plain dumb. And that's all it comes down to.
I think that's so much of why the mantra is still the most important tool that we have to fighting white genocide. You know, Bob wrote it down in 222 words, and it breaks it down so beautifully in saying that, you know, what sane black men wouldn't oppose to this, you know, if they were flooding Africa with millions of non-Africans. and force assimilating them. You know, what sane black man wouldn't oppose to this? And that's the same exactly for white countries, in pointing out that, you know, Belgium and the Netherlands are just as crowded as Japan and Taiwan, but yet we are forced to bring in millions of non-white third worlders and we are forced to assimilate. And yet if we oppose it, we are labeled as Nazis and white supremacists. Nazis who want to kill 6 million Jews.
Yeah, and it's those labels that they use to maintain power.
Exactly.
It's people, a lot of pro-whites don't seem to understand that. That's what has to be, those labels are what have to be discredited and attacked and replaced with our label.
Yep. Exactly.
You got to take out, you got to take out racists like you take out an enemy pillbox or a tank or an aircraft. You know, they have to be taken out.
Discredited. I love that word, discredited. I think that's brilliant.
That's one of those political terms that we need to get used to. Delegitimized, discredited.
And that's exactly what our terminology does. You know, it discredits the anti-whites. It puts us on the attack, the moral high ground, and that's why repeating it is just the most effective method in exposing them. And that's what we want to encourage all pro-whites to do, is just to get out there and repeat the talking points of exposing anti-whites, you know, pointing out what they are doing is pushing for a world with no more white children.
That's what they're always arguing for, that, but then when you try to pin them down on it, try to see, they either try to justify it or they deny it.
Exactly. And that's awesome, you know, right? That's a fantastic position to be in for a pro-white, is once you have them justifying or denying it, you know, you're in a position to go on the attack, you know, further and really expose what their belief system is and how anti-white they are.
For a lot of these people, I mean, if you look at it like in a sports sense, is that they're used to always playing defense. They're used to always being in a defensive posture, and they can't help it. Is that all they want to do is go on defense. And if you show them how to go on offense, that they get lost. If we can't convert them to play offense, then we're going to have to find new players.
Well, it takes practice, you know, like we've said before earlier in this, right, guys, it takes practice and, you know, not being afraid to look silly or unintellectual, as a lot of pro-whites, you know, really want to do the opposite. So,
yeah, they want to tell everybody how smart they are.
Yeah.
They want everybody to see how smart their black crime statistics, and that they figured out Jews clues, and they're really smart.
Yeah.
And that's basically their whole message. Their whole message seems to be that they want to prove to everybody that they're a genius and that they figured everything out.
This is kind of something to grow up against, though, because our enemies are professionals. They are the class that is good at manipulating words. They are the lawyers, the bureaucrats, the professors, the politicians. They have coalesced under this anti-white system. That's how they maintain their power. So that's what they support. So we're all their enemies, us. We're not professional wordsmiths, right? Well, at least most of us aren't. Right? Bob was.
Right. Bob was.
This is their job. You know, we're trying to use words against the professional wordism class. So that's, I think, an inherent problem. And I don't know necessarily what the solution is, but just to get people just to even to think about fighting in these terms, that okay, these people, they're in power, they maintain power through their use of words, and we have to attack them on their basis, even though we're maybe not as good at it as them.
Right.
But the only thing we have is we do have the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one solution is we got to get that class of people on our side, at least the white ones, you know, right? Most anti-whites are white. Well, you're a traitor. Why are you a traitor? You at least try to get them on our side. You know, once we get more of that type on our side, maybe things will get better. And you know, there's already a lot of that. There's already a lot of smart people on our side. They're not on message, though, yet, for the most part. And this goes back to something I've been wondering about, this whole idea of all power flips back and forth between the warrior class and the priest class. right? The warrior class rules just by force. But then the priest class comes in and figures out some kind of word game, some kind of con, some kind of religion to take power. And they convince the masses to follow them instead of the warriors. So they flip back and forth. And I'm thinking that maybe we're still in that paradigm. And right now it's the priest class that's in power. The warrior class is completely subdued. They're worried about, most of them go into business, really. Some of them go into politics. But I don't see the priest class losing power, though, because of technology, because of mass media technology, and the fact that you have to be in a democracy, really, to get broad consensus from people to keep the wheels turning, to keep everything from getting monkey wrenched. So we have to figure out a way to rein in the priest class, I guess, basically, and shame them into contributing to the public good instead of playing their games they've been playing for 10,000 years.
Yeah. I think that a lot of that is what the pro-whites, they don't like the game that is being played against whites. And I don't like the game, this whole wordism right. game that's being played against whites. And so they say, well, I'm not going to join in on that. Well, I mean, in order for us to win, we've got to play this game. You know, I don't like it, and I don't think any of you like that game. But we're going to have to play it. We're going to have to win it, and then we can change the game back to something that's more reasonable. It's really
in the sense that it is a game. I mean, it is a game that we are playing, and, you know, a game of terminology and consensus. So I think that's the point of what we're doing is that we are forcing our terminology, and we're changing that paradigm in a sense that people are seeing that it is so blatant and so obvious that it is anti-white, and you know that if we give them the tools to respond to it, that they are willing to step up against that elite class and say, you know that they disagree with that. I mean, isn't that what we saw? Isn't that what happened with the Soviet Union? The same sort of thing that they, you know, their simple truth exposed. You know, it was a major part of bringing down the Soviet Union, those simple truths. You know, that truth about the, you know, that there was, you know, if it's a workers' paradise, then why do they need guns at the border? You know, it was something like that that was so easily repeated, you know, that the people started repeating that they ended up, you know, breaking out of that consensus, that trance.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at a Soviet sense, is that we're the Samizdat spreading out these different memes and talking points, and these other pro-whites are just having communions, private meetings where they just agree with each other, and that's all they're doing.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, most of people go to pro-white boards to get away from anti-whites. Well, you're not going to learn much there. Maybe a little bit. The only people you're going to learn anything from is people that have actually engaged with anti-whites.
Yep.
And the only way you're going to really learn is to yourself engage with anti-whites.
Right. And if you're afraid of being humiliated, then you just make a fake moniker, and nobody's going to know who you are, and you go out and practice. And, you know, these anti-whites are all over Twitter, and they're more than willing to be your subject, many of them. You'll find plenty of them that will help. You know, help you learn how to respond to them, and you'll get an idea of what they're thinking. Yeah, I mean, in a sense, there is an echo chamber within the pro-white community, and many people prefer that rather than going out and confronting anti-whites and doing stuff that helps spread a message. That's the unfortunate thing. And again, I think a lot of them some of these people know the game of wordism. It's just they think that they're above it, and I don't want to play that stupid game. Well, then you're not going to help us win. Pretty simple.
It's a matter of priorities. I mean, a lot of this other stuff, there's a lot of things that need to be done, you know, besides fight the propaganda war, but that's the most important thing. And that's what needs to be, should have the most effort put forward toward it. But right now, I would say maybe 5% of everything spoken, done, on the pro-white side, maybe 5% is effective. But it's just better than it was a few years ago. Maybe it was 3% 5 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't see Fox News using any of their talking points. I don't really see it. at least the alt-right. But there's that one video I put up on my Facebook, and that black guy pretty much verbatim using our shit. Like, nobody says Africa needs more diversity. He pretty much read a mint. It was a black guy on Fox News.
Yeah, we've done a lot. We've done a lot with a little bit of effort. What if you had an army and only 5% of your people shot at the enemy? How far would you get? How effective would you be? Yeah, you need some people, you know, policing the back areas. You need some people patrolling the supply lines. You need some people, you need doctors back there fixing up people. You need you need your artillery support. You need all kinds of different support.
You need
people doing other things besides that, but you need most of your people shooting at the enemy most of the time. And there's hardly any of that, really.
Yeah, most of the people that join the army are given a gun and put on the line. Some people are in the back doing research on different things.
Yeah.
But most of the people are on the front lines.
And if you're shooting at, if somebody's shooting at you, is your first priority to say whether that guy has sidelocks and a yarmulke? Or is your first priority to shoot back at him? You know, if he doesn't have sidelocks, you're not going to shoot at him? Is that your attitude? Yeah. How far do you think you're going to get that way?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
It's priorities. If they're shooting at you, you shoot back.
Yep.
You don't say, well, you know, is he a Jew? Is he black? You know, if he's shooting at you, shoot back. Well, why are they shooting? No, shoot back.
It's even worse than that, is that they're in a camp somewhere else talking about the people shooting at each other. They're not even picking up a gun.
And it was maybe Chuck Roy or someone that I remember hearing that mean that, you know, if someone's holding you underwater, you know, you're not worried about anything else except getting that next breath of air. You know, if someone's shooting at you, you're not worried about anything else except shooting back. So that's the point that we're trying to make. You know, we're not trying to defend ourselves or trying to make any other points except for the point that we're trying to get that breath of air. We're trying to be able to expose or oppose what is going on without being drowned.
Yeah, well, when you can't breathe, nothing else matters.
Nothing else matters.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to see more of our work, please visit our website, fightwhitegenocide.com.